I think he would still be proud of us today to know that we do encourage professional advancement. You know, we help employees pass the CPA exam. We reimburse them for review courses. There are some financial bonuses once you pass the exam if you do it within a certain time frame of being hired. So all of those efforts that we do today is what he started back in the 60s when he came on board at Morgan State University and started tutoring and training accounting students at 18, 19 years old.
Welcome back, friends, relations, family. Whoever you are, I'm just glad you're here, truly. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to episode number 166 of Future Proof. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. Thanks for joining our dirty little guild this week. Let's get things started this week with this, shall we? Today's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Okay, so this week, it's here, right? February, Black History Month. And I was trying to find an appropriate way to kind of talk about Black history in the context of our profession. And the answer, as it turns out, is right here in the state of Maryland. My boss, Jackie Brown, suggested that I reach out to some of the fine folks at King King and Associates. And here's why. This is a Baltimore firm that's run by the children of Maryland's first Black CPA. His name is Benjamin King Sr. And if you don't know much about him, well, you should. So here you go. Little history lesson. This comes straight from the MACPA's history book, by the way, which was published in 2001 in celebration of the MACPA's 100th anniversary. Here's what it says. So Benjamin King Sr., he became the first African-American CPA in the state of Maryland and only the 45th in the United States in 1957. He was one of four children, grew up in D.C., graduated from Dunbar High School, wanted to be a CPA since high school, right? Graduated from Virginia State University in 1950, served in the U.S. Army in the Korean War until 1952. He tried to get a job as an Army auditor, was initially told he was unqualified, an answer he unfortunately heard all too often, and then was eventually hired as an auditor with the U.S. Army Audit Agency, still determined to become a CPA, however. So he enrolled at American University through the GI Bill, and this passage comes straight from the MACPA history book. It reads, quote, King frequently applied for jobs in accounting while studying at American University. He was always rejected after the potential employer learned that he was African-American. These rejections prevented him from meeting the two-year experience requirement to take the CPA examination in Washington, D.C. To obtain the required experience, people suggested that he get a job with the federal government in Virginia or move to another state and work for a Black CPA firm. If King had chosen to get a job right with the federal government in Virginia, he would have had to work for 4 years to qualify to sit for the examination in Virginia. Moving to another state to work for a Black CPA firm would have required him to move hundreds of miles away, possibly to Michigan, Illinois, or New York. So King looked for other alternatives and learned that Maryland did not have an experience requirement. King's accounting courses at American University qualified him to sit for the examination. He still needed to satisfy the residency requirement. And to meet this requirement, he moved to Maryland and lived with his uncle. He became a Maryland CPA in 1957 and joined the Maryland Association of CPAs in 1958. And one of his professors from American University paid his member dues, end quote. So from there, he started his own firm, Benjamin King CPA, in 1957, serving mainly Black-owned businesses in Baltimore. The firm grew, and in 1958, he entered a partnership with Arthur Reynolds Sr., and the firm became King Reynolds & Company. Oh, yeah, by the way, he was also the first African-American to be appointed to the Maryland State Board of Accountancy, ultimately became the first African-American to chair that board, And Maryland's state board, by the way, has had at least one Black member each year since King's tenure. So another one of his passions, helping young professionals kind of make their way into the profession. King served on the faculty at Morgan State University and had profound impact on a number of his students. One student, Roman Henderson Pearson, who would go on to become Auditor General for the state of Michigan and a member of Michigan State Board of Accountancy. He had this to say about Benjamin King, quote, "You made the idea of being an accountant achievable in my mind. You made the whole notion of being on a state licensing board achievable in my mind. You planted these ideas. I made my decision fall right in line with these ideas, with the power of your words planted on my mind at the age of 19. You have been a wonderful shepherd, and your flock has been super productive." And another student, Alan Boston, who would go on to become a partner and national director of minority recruitment at Ernst & Young, LLP, described King's impact this way. He said, quote, "Ben King Sr. did a fantastic job on getting students to understand auditing, but more importantly, on getting students to want to become a CPA. Without exaggeration, the MACPA's history book states, King can be viewed as the father of African-American CPAs in Maryland," end quote. And Ben King died in 2005 at the age of 77. That alone would have been a hell of a legacy, all of that, right? But here's the thing. He was the father of five children, four of whom are now CPAs, three of whom now work for the Baltimore firm that he founded. And those three CPAs are my guests this week. They are Pamela King Smith, Kara King Bess, and Anthony King. Now, Pamela is the firm's president and administrative and tax principal. Kara is the firm's audit principal and vice president. And Tony directs the firm's business advisory and consulting practice and is also responsible for the firm's IT and management advisory engagements. So I was just so happy to sit down and talk with them about their father's legacy and his place in the history of our profession, where this profession, you know, stands now in terms of diversity and inclusion versus, you know, where we were when their father founded the firm. And with a hat tip to their father's passion for young professionals, I also wanted to hear their advice for students who are just now preparing to enter the profession and leave their own marks, just as Benjamin King did. A great talk this week with three of our profession's true visionaries and leaders, each of whom is the child of one of our profession's founding fathers. Here is my conversation with Pamela King Smith, Kara King Bess, and Anthony King.
Our father, Benjamin L. King, CPA, started the firm in 1957 once he passed the CPA exam, making him the first Black certified public accountant in the state of Maryland and the 47th in the country. At that time, he had to take the exam in Maryland because as he was trying to get experience in DC, no one would hire him. So he took the exam in Maryland and moved the family into Maryland. At that point, he was working with Art Reynolds, who became the second CPA, African-American CPA in the state of Maryland. And so they started out with King Reynolds and Company. That's how the firm started. Mr. Reynolds went on to become an attorney, and then my father continued just as Benjamin L. King, CPA, over the years. And then later on,
can I just interject one quick thing about Art? The reason Art Reynolds eventually left the firm of King Reynolds and Company, because once he passed the bar exam, the courts had ruled that CPAs were not entitled to the same privilege as attorneys in terms of client CPA and client attorney representations.
Okay.
So Art felt it was in his best interest as a CPA and an attorney, that when he came to the office, not knowing which hat to put on, whether he's a lawyer today or a CPA today. So that's what eventually led Art to make the decision to not practice accounting anymore and then focused 100% on his law firm.
Okay.
But it did start off as King Reynolds and Company, CPAs, but then once Art passed the bar exam and started building his law practice, that was almost mandatory, but as far as he was concerned, because of the client privilege relationship that he had to give up practicing as a CPA.
What do you all remember most about your father from the early days, like maybe even back when you were kids? What kind of memories stick out for you guys?
You mean his strictness?
My memory is dangling the car keys in front of my face when I turned 16. And he said, hey, you want to get your driver's license? You want to drive my Cadillac? You want to drive my Lincoln Continental? I said, of course I do. I'm 16 years old. He said, okay, come on down to the office next Saturday and you start to work. So I've been doing this since I was 16 years old. And now I am well beyond that, but it's been quite a while. It's been quite a while.
Pamela, how about you? What
I can remember, he was also a professor at Morgan State University, then probably college, teaching accounting. And I don't know why this is in my mind, but I can remember him bringing home test papers, grading them, and me looking and trying to see what he was doing and helping him grade the college papers. Because my mom would help him with stuff. So he was a professor at Morgan also, and brought up a lot of CPAs, well, a lot of accounting students. You know, he helped them through the ranks after they graduated. He gave them opportunities for employment. And I remember, because my oldest brother, one of his friends from Hampton, she was going to be a school teacher or math teacher. Yep. And when my dad met her, he was like, no, you're not. You're going to be a CPA. You're going to be an accounting major. So he had a lot of influence on a lot of people's careers at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that friend just happens to be Joan Pratt, CPA.
Garrett, you were going through a little bit of his backstory and history there. Do you have any idea, did your dad have a sense of his place in Maryland's history or the history of the profession? Did he really did that have a grasp on that?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the negative part of it was always in the forefront of his mind in terms of when he passed the CPA. I think he said he went to a Maryland Association of CPAs dinner and no one would sit with him. So things like that. He was very aware of the impact that he was going to make.
Yeah. Yeah. But how much, you mentioned a little bit of that negative part of being in the position that he was in. How much of that did he have to deal with? Was it a lot? Was it daily? Give me a sense of that type of thing that he was working through.
It was very considerable, because when he first opened the doors with Art Reynolds, the first office was located in Washington, D.C. But since I had already established a Maryland presence, he moved the family from Prince George's County to Baltimore. And initially, his clientele were small minority-owned businesses, grocery stores, gas stations, barbershops. Those are the types of businesses that were the foundation of his firm initially. And eventually, you know, he branched out to pick up a few city and state contracts, things like that. But the bulk of the firm's initial clientele were the small Black-owned businesses throughout North and Northwest Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And at that time, he felt it was very challenging to go into the majority community, if I want to say the majority community, and seek clientele there. At that time, African-American accountants and lawyers and doctors were not trusted within the majority community to do business with them. Mm-hmm. So he built a foundation on those small minority-owned businesses. And of course, that transitioned over the years into the firm that we are today with a multicultural client base right now. And I remember him telling me, he may have told each one of us different stories, but when he first passed the exam, he went to several other minority firms in the DC area, in DC, and offered to work for free, but they still would not hire him. One story he told me was that he went to a minority-owned CPA who was already in practice and said, hey, you know, I'll even work for free. I just need the experience. Well, no, I'm not going to hire you, because if I hire you and you pass the exam, you're going to become my competitor. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, he said, well, okay, you know, once I get through this initial journey, I will make sure there will not be another minority CPA candidate who cannot get a job and satisfy the experience requirement. So when he became the adjunct lecturer at Morgan, there's countless number of accounting students that came through his firm to get that job opportunity and that experience requirement. And eventually he became chairman of the Maryland State Board, and right. His signature is on the CPA certificates of a lot of those students who he helped 15 years earlier at Morgan State University.
That I was going to say, there are in the MACPA's history book, in the section on your dad, there are at least a couple, maybe more than that, of testimonials from his students about the impact that he had on their lives and how he helped them make that transition from college into the profession at a time when it wasn't an easy transition to make. And
Not at all.
Pamela, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say, when we came over here, he started office on Pennsylvania Avenue. So, and if you know anything about Baltimore, it's kind of in the hood. So Pennsylvania Avenue, and he just became very well known to helping out, like Tony said, small Black businesses, his clientele. He would help with loan packaging, accounting, tax. He was just very well known in that area. And then we moved out from there to other locations, but he started out right on Pennsylvania Avenue.
And many of the clients that he started with in the early 1960s are still with us. Those who are still alive, we have one that passed probably 2 years ago, but he would always say, your father made me open a checking account in the 1960s, and I will forever be grateful. So just things like that.
How does that make you feel when you hear longtime clients?
Very proud, very proud. Mm-hmm. The one that Tony always tells the story is there's a funeral home in DC that was one of his first clients, and they are still a client with us now. So we've carried on his legacy of servicing that client from 1957.
And that client happens to be another minority-owned family business like we are. And that family business goes back to 1912. Hmm. And so they are the second and third generation of owners right now. And that particular entity, multi-million dollar business right now, that entity was the very first client of his firm because he started off in DC initially. And like Pam said, they are still a client today. Matter of fact, I have another Zoom meeting with them, the owners, today when I finish with you guys.
But Carrie, you said that you felt like your dad understood his place in history and what he was doing from a historical perspective in the profession. What's your sense of his place in history? When you think of, you know, this profession and how far African-American CPAs have come, and you think of your dad, what comes to mind?
The positive impact that he has had on accounting students in the state of Maryland. As Pam said, there are countless number of students who went through Morgan, who went through my father. And he, I think that because of what happened to him, what Tony said about the minority firm not hiring him, he went on to start the Baltimore chapter of the National Association of Black Accountants. And our motto is lifting as we climb. Mm-hmm. So he has definitely embodied that. He definitely embodied that his whole career.
Tony, Pamela, what about you? What do you think of in terms of his place in history?
I think he would be somewhat disappointed if he was still with us today. Disappointed in the advancement of minorities and people of color into our profession. If you looked at the current statistics, they're not that much more impressive than they were in 1973 when the AICPA first commissioned a gentleman named Burt Mitchell. Right now, Mitchell Titus is probably the largest minority-owned firm in the country. They commissioned a study in 1973 for that particular reason. It wasn't called people of color back in 73. It was actually minorities in the accounting profession. Mm-hmm. And that study showed there at that time, there were 270,000 CPAs and less than 1% of those 270,000 CPAs were minority. Fast forward 30, 40, 50 years, the profession now has, and if you include SEMA, the profession now has 650,000 CPAs or professional accountants worldwide, the AICPA and as well as the sister organization in Europe. And that percent, the number is much greater. There's 5,000 to 7,000 minority CPAs in the country now, but that percent is still somewhere around 1.5%. So he would be disappointed. He would be, you know, impressed at the growth from 150 CPAs to 5,000 CPAs, but on a percentage basis, the profession still has a long way to go in terms of improving the advancement of minorities in the profession. And I think one issue is that in order to fulfill that goal, it has to start at the high school and college level. So you graduate from a college with a degree in accounting, you get a job at one of the big four firms or even a minority firm or a large regional firm. But then what are they doing to keep that minority employee in the profession? What are their goals? How do they advance them? Does somebody take them on as a mentor? And they go from a staff accountant to senior to audit manager, but then, wow, what happens? After 10 years, why are they not a partner by now? So that is still a challenge within the profession. It's not necessarily a large firm or a small firm issue. It is a professional issue. It's the profession itself. Especially, like I said, if you have 650,000 members and still somewhere in the neighborhood of only 1.5% are people of color.
And to piggyback just a little bit, we have tried as a firm to reach back to the students too, because we are asked to talk to high school students in their business classes, talk to college students in the accounting field about the opportunities for CPA, try to tell them how important that those three letters are behind their name and not just get the degree in accounting, but move forward to do the CPA. And when we can, when we have openings, we are always going to the schools to try to recruit talented employees also.
And that seemed to be, just from reading what I know about him from the history book, a passion of your father's was working with those students as they're not even entering the profession, but preparing to, right?
Just, right.
Yeah.
He probably dissuaded some of them too after going through his classes. Your father failed me in accounting, so I don't know if I want to do this, but he was a tough teacher, I'm sure, but they would have definitely learned a lot from him.
I'm curious from all three of you, why accounting for you? All three of you followed in your father's footsteps there. Was there any question of you not doing that, or what drew you to the profession?
For me, I think I liked the idea of being my own boss and building something that he had already started. I remember when I was, you know, in college and the accounting students that were my friends, they were worried about getting the interviews when the companies came on campus to interview. And I didn't have to do that because I had a job waiting for me. Just being able to help others, but being my own boss.
Mm-hmm. Kara, what were you going to say?
I guess starting in high school, I started taking bookkeeping classes at Western High School and then continued on to Virginia State University, which is where Pam attended and also where my father and my mother attended. So I did well in the accounting courses at Virginia State University and then went on to, and actually while I was at Virginia State, I interned with Coopers & Lybrandt, which, what is it now? I can't even tell you.
PwC.
Okay, PwC, but it was Coopers & Lybrandt at that time. So I did a summer intern with them. And I remember going up to WISP for an audit up in Western Maryland and had a good summer and knew that was what I wanted to do. And then I went on to do my master's in accounting from Columbia University. And there I interned at PepsiCo. So I got the opportunity to see the Big Eight, what was then the Big Eight side. I got to see the corporate side. But as Tony said, we all worked in the company. We all worked for my father from 15 years until. And I really wanted, I knew that I was going to come back to the family business. There was no question.
And Tony, you wanted a car, right?
Yeah, I wanted a car. No, I wanted my driver's license. The way I got my first car was to work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week when I was in between semesters in college. But I also recall a conversation I had with him one Saturday afternoon. I mentioned to him that I wanted to go to law school, not necessarily follow up in accounting after I finished my undergrad. I wanted to go to law school. He said, oh, that sounds great. A JD and a CPA, you would have a great path ahead of you. The only one problem, though, if you wanted to be an attorney, I don't think you talk enough. You're not verbal enough. So he didn't discourage me from pursuing a law degree, because he actually told me once that, said, listen, when you get to college, and this was my high school senior year, when you get to college, if you want to major in English, major in English. All I'm doing right now is laying the foundation for you and your brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. You want to major in history? Major in history. All I'm doing is laying the foundation for it. Mm-hmm. You want to follow the business route, then, you know, yeah, go ahead and do that. But no, you do not have to become an accountant when you finish school. I took a somewhat separate path. I stayed with him for quite a while. I left Baltimore for corporate America, and I spent 22 years in corporate America in Atlanta, Charlotte, and New York. And I came back to Baltimore in 1992.
Okay.
So I rejoined the firm in 1992, but I was after spending 20 years in a financial services area in New York. I worked for one of the Big Eight firms. It was Deloitte and Touche back in those days.
Right.
where I managed their firm. I managed the firm's treasury and tax functions. So we were the accounting department for the accounting. So I managed all of their investment treasury functions and the partnership tax functions. And then, you know, I went on to different positions in corporate America in Atlanta and in Charlotte, North Carolina, and then came back, like I said, came back in 1992 and brought back 20 years of experiences back to the firm.
Nice.
So I think each of us have a different, have something different to that we contribute to the business. I have a master's in tax. Kara has the MBA, and Tony is our computer geek. So we do everything. The IT, he's the IT person for us.
Yeah, so I have a master's in information systems.
So we each, you know, bring something different to the table to be able to grow King King and Associates.
That's great. How much do you think your firm a reflection of your father and his work?
I think it's a big reflection because people have known about him for so long, and we get some clients coming in and we ask, how did you hear about us? Oh, I knew about your dad a long time ago and he helped with such and such. So I think the firm is a great reflection on his character and his and what he did 50, 60 years ago.
And the expansion that we've been able to do with the majority firms in terms of subcontracting is what Pam, Tony, and I have brought to the firm and been able to expand the firm. So we still have our base. We still have, like I said, a good number of my father's clients, individual and business clients, but we've been able to expand the firm with our contacts in terms of the majority firms.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, and at one time, it wasn't too long ago, that almost, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% of our professional staff were people of color from outside the United States. So his push to expand the educational opportunities were not limited to just Morgan State University. I think he would still be proud of us today to know that we do encourage professional advancement. You know, we help employees pass the CPA exam. We reimburse them for review courses. There are some financial bonuses once you pass the exam if you do it within a certain time frame of being hired. So all of those efforts that we do today is what he started back in the 60s when he came on board at Morgan State University and started tutoring and training accounting students at 18, 19 years old.
I'm curious. I mean, that was such a big part of what he did, it seems to me, is the work that he did with students. What kind of advice would each of you offer a young professional who's just getting ready to enter the profession? What kind of advice would you send their way?
I would say after graduation, take the exam as soon as possible after graduating. Don't put it off because you know you're in the learning mode right after graduation. So try to get that CPA license, get those three letters behind your name, and you can branch out to see if you're interested in public accounting. There's so many different areas, as we all know, of accounting. Corporate America, you can be academia, public accounting. So try to find your niche of what you like and to maybe, if you can, do those internships while you're in college. And that gives you maybe a sense of what areas you might want to go into after graduation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say perseverance is a key. It's a key concept. So once they finish college and they are lucky enough to land a job, whether it's in corporate America, public accounting, et cetera, then pursue a mentee-mentor relationship. Find someone who's going to champion your cause, because that's how you're going to climb the ladder, either to the C-suite in corporate America or to partner level in public accounting.
Mm-hmm. Just do well while you're in undergrad. Try to get an internship while you're in undergrad. And like Pam said, take that exam as soon as possible after graduating. And then, of course, network. Use your parents. Use your classmates. Use whomever there is to connect you with people in the profession.
He did a lot of networking back then. He was always out and about with different functions and events to put his name out there.
I've been doing a lot of work at the national level with the AICPA. I've served on several AICPA committees, the executive committee of the PCPS, and also the nominating committee with the AICPA. But the PCPS is focused on, it's called the Public Companies Private Section. And it's focused on the, not necessarily the big four, but we have found out over the years that there are 44,000 CPA firms, and these are studies published by the PCPS, 44,000 CPA firms in the country. 39,000 are similar to King & Associates. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about anywhere from 1 to 20 professionals, maybe 5 to 6 partners, upwards of, you know, maybe 50 professionals. But just think about it. Out of 44,000 CPA firms that the AICPA knows about, 39,000 of them, you're looking at one of them right now.
Right.
they're of this type of a professional service firm. And what the PCPS has found is that attracting and retaining professional staff is the most challenging of almost all of the CPA firms. Once you get past attracting and retaining, then moving them to partnership level is another challenge. So in terms of what advice someone coming out of college at 22 years old, find your interest. Doesn't have to be public accounting, but as Pam said, find your interest and go for it. Just stick with it, stay with it. And a mentor or mentee relationship almost always helps that particular goal, that challenge.
Great advice. Listen, Tony, Pamela, Kara, thank you so much for being here today, for sharing some of your insights and memories of your dad. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you for thinking of us. Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you so much again for your time. I know you're busy with everything that you're working on there, but I do appreciate you taking a few minutes and sitting down with me. So thank you.
Thank you.
What an inspiring conversation right there. Great stuff there from Pamela King-Smith, Kara King-Bess, and Anthony King. They are managing partners with King, King & Associates in Baltimore. You can, of course, find out more at king-king.com. And listen, maybe the best way that you can continue Benjamin King's legacy is by making a contribution to the NACPA Foundation. The foundation works to build a strong and diverse talent pipeline with resources for future CPAs and educators. It supports diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. It provides training, grants scholarships, facilitates mentorship connections, all in order to increase growth and engagement. And your support helps the profession succeed. So donate now by visiting macpa.org/foundation. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. Here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is it, gang. Have a great week. We will talk to you again soon.